This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Today we're talking with Grammy Award-winning classical guitarist Jason Vio and maestro David Commande. Jason is the featured soloist with the Heartland Festival Orchestra for their upcoming concert this Saturday evening entitled Guitar Classic at Five Points, Washington. Welcome, David and Jason.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Nathan. It's great to be here.
Great to be here.
Now, Jason, I understand this is not your first time in Peoria. Welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, Nathan reminded me that I played a solo recital here at Bradley about 15 years ago, which is amazing. When David said we were going to be on the radio here at Bradley, it did kind of ring a bell, but I couldn't place it. But this is my second time with Heartland Festival Orchestra. I was here in the fall of 2014 playing a different Rodrigo concerto from this one. So we're doing the other famous one, the Fantasia para un Gentilhombre this weekend.
As you said, you'll be playing the Fantasia for a Gentleman by Rodrigo mm-hmm. on this program. What's interesting about this piece in particular?
Well, Rodrigo spent a lot of his compositions revisiting a former era, you know, a prior era in music, like the Baroque era or Renaissance era. And so he was really fascinated by combining the style of older music or referencing it and combining it with, you know, modern techniques and modern dissonance and this kind of thing. So while the Concierto de Aranjuez, what we played 4 years ago, were original, you know, melodies, tunes, chords, everything, but evoking a palace, you know, the Palacio de Aranjuez from the 12th century. This is actually using themes by Spanish composer Gaspar Sanz, including, for example, the last movement is the Canario from Gaspar Sanz's Suite Española, which would have been part of a Baroque guitar manual on instruction on playing, and then it would have a collection of pieces, and Canario would have been one of them. And all the movements are basically from this collection and tutorial on guitar playing from the early 1600s. And so Rodrigo was inspired by these pieces, but what he does with them is he creates entirely new music and an entirely new piece out of it. It's really a work of musical genius and very accessible but very smart music. And it's kind of a wonderful dialogue between the guitar and the orchestra. Kind of like the soloist, there's a lot of dialogue kind of things where the soloist plays something and then the orchestra will sort of comment on it or vice versa.
And the orchestration is fascinating, too,
yeah.
With a very light wind complement to the strings. It's fascinating to listen to an orchestral duet between the flute and the trumpet, of all
yeah.
things. So it's all very delicate. It has a very special flavor. And, of course, in the 20th century, it was not uncommon that Respighi or Stravinsky being inspired and taking music from an earlier time and either rescoring it or reimagining it.
Yes.
So that was quite common. And a lot of marvelous works have come out of that impulse.
So what are some of the challenges when you put a acoustic instrument like the classic guitar next to an orchestra in terms of balancing, or is all of that taken care of in merely the orchestration of the work?
Well, depends a bit on the space and the performance space these days, really, because the interesting thing about this piece, this is the second Rodrigo concerto for guitar. The first one, Concierto de Aranjuez, was written in 1939, and this one was around 1956.
He wrote it in 51, and
51.
It premiered in 54. Yeah.
But this second one was for Andres Segovia, who refused to play with amplification. And so a lot of, I think, why is this like guitar plays, then orchestra plays, then guitar plays type of texture, or at least very light strings and a wind here and, you know, this kind of thing when the guitar is playing, probably had a lot to do with, you know, Segovia's personality and smarts when it, you know, came to that kind of thing, because he did not want to have to amplify the guitar if he was going to play it.
And even in chamber music, I imagine you've done it more than I have, but if you're playing with a string trio or string quartet, balance is an issue even there, isn't
it? For sure, particularly in something like Castelnuovo Tedesco quintet, not so much with the Boccherini guitar and string quartet pieces, but yes, depending on the composer. In fact, the other concerto that we're playing on the program by Jeff Beal started out life in 2015 as a string quartet and guitar piece, and Jeff was very sensitive to those things as well within the string quartet thing. And the idea was so that you could play it, the guitarist, if they had a a strong enough sound and whatnot, could play it without amplification.
So we should also share with the listeners that Jeff Beal, if they don't recognize the name, is best known for scoring the music to the Netflix series House of Cards.
Yeah, he won four or five Emmys, I think, by this point, and other shows like Monk and Ugly Betty and this kind of thing. But he's Eastman trained musician and played classical trumpet. He's a virtuoso trumpet player. And so I think what now he's been spending a little bit more of his composition time on concert music, in the sense of things not merely for film or television, but the concert stage as well.
And since people often can be alarmed at the idea of going to a concert and hearing music written by someone who's actually alive right now, it can be alarming, right? Let's characterize. Yeah. What is it like to listen to the 616?
Well, it's, Jeff and I actually listen to a lot of this similar kind of music, particularly from the 70s era of 60s, 70s, 80s era of jazz music. So, like, we're both, like, big, Keith Jarrett, Miles Davis, Pat Metheny, fans, Chick Corea, this kind of thing. So a lot of the music is actually is pretty groove oriented stuff, but meaning like there's like a propulsive quality to it, and it's a type of playing that where the orchestra and the soloist in this case have to really be kind of locked into a sort of a pocket together. And so all three movements do that, but the music is melodic, it's accessible, it's moody in places. The second movement has actually got a little bit of a minimalist kind of tinge to it, but very
dreamy.
Lovely.
Yes, beautiful, very dreamy.
Very dreamy, yeah. Yes. That's a good description of it. Yeah. And then the third has almost kind of like a Middle Eastern or Mediterranean type of flavor to the melodic content of it,
and the rhythm
exactly, a lot of sort of like complex or compound meter,
which sounds scary, but it's not hard to listen to.
No, it's all very kind of bouncy and groovy, actually, that third movement, and lots of like very fast passage work for the guitar, which I was practicing this morning in the hotel. It's one of those. The third movement especially is like one of those, first movement too, where you got to really have your chops together for it.
We should also talk about the other piece that you're performing on the program, Jason. This is by a living composer. It may not be as familiar to as many people, but it's called 616. And what should people know about this? What makes it interesting?
Well, this is by a four-time Emmy Award-winning composer, Jeff Beal, who audiences would probably be most familiar with through the Netflix very successful series House of Cards. And he also wrote music in the past for shows like Monk and Ugly Betty. And lately he's been maybe devoting more of his attention, at least, to concert music. And I met Jeff at Lexington Chamber Music Festival in Lexington, Kentucky, in 2015, where they have a kind of a composer in residence for the week, and they commissioned like three or four pieces from him. So he wrote a guitar and string quartet piece, and that's where the title comes from. Six refers to the number of strings on the guitar in 6/16, and then the 16 refers to the four instruments of the string quartet and each of their four strings added together. And the quality of the music is, although it's a very new piece from 2015, very accessible and a little bit more, Jeff and I, we really bonded that week on all the kind of music that we listened together and kind of came of age listening together. He went to Eastman School of Music and was trained as a virtuoso trumpet player. But also as a trumpet player, like, he can totally blow over changes. Like, he's a very good jazz trumpeter as well. And we were spent a lot of a week just, kind of oohing and eyeing over like Miles Davis and like which are our favorite records and, Weather Report and Pat Metheny Group and Wayne Shorter and this sort of thing. So, like, we're very big fans of that era of jazz, like, you know, late 60s, 70s, 80s. So a lot of that actually does sort of work its way into this piece. It's a little bit of that. I mean, it's sort of like a dash of that and a dash, you know, kind of a healthy amount of sort of groove music, like pocket playing music where the orchestra and the soloist really have to be locked in together into this kind of rhythm or a pulse or a meter that has kind of like a very propulsive quality to it. And with some virtuosic kind of flashes of playing, not just by the soloist, but also the winds have some pretty gnarly things, for example. So the third movement's more, you know, energetic and
extroverted.
Extroverted and a little bit more of kind of like a Mediterranean flavor in the melodies and sort of the riffs or the thematic material. Second movement is this very beautiful, dreamy, kind of almost a bit minimalist, but a lot more melodic than what we would think of as, I think, minimalist music would be. Just very, very lovely, beautiful piece of music. And it's
gorgeous music, and both guitar concertos have this quality with just a light string complement, and then small numbers of woodwinds or winds and brass, just the lightest color and flavor. And in both cases, the orchestration is brilliant, so that you end up hearing the guitar fantastically.
Yeah,
Jason, you were mentioning before we started recording how much you still love practicing your guitar. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, you sort of with kids. I've got two young kids, and you know, teaching and stuff at two major conservatories at Curtis and Cleveland, and still kind of, you know, basically being on the road like, you know, 2/3 of the year. You really appreciate just having some time alone with your guitar, sort of more than ever after 25 years of touring. So, yeah, I still, like, this morning I got in, I taught at CIM yesterday morning and then drove to Peoria because I live close enough in Cleveland that it kind of made sense to drive, and got in pretty late here last night around 11:30 or 12, and really the only thing I was kind of looking forward to after a good night's sleep was like just having like a couple hours with the guitar. So that's, I think, a good thing. Yeah, you still want to practice. Yeah.
David, talk a little bit about the choice to pair up these guitar pieces with a couple of symphonies from the classical era. One of them was written by very young Mozart. The other was by Haydn later in his career. Do these also have a little bit of that lighter orchestral touch that you find in the guitar pieces?
They do. You've picked up on that. And they match well. The role of the winds in a symphony evolved. And in the modern age, the winds and the brass, you know, they become incredibly powerful and overwhelming almost to the strings. But as symphonies were growing up, they add color and depth and texture to what often is almost complete in the string writing. So first of all, it's complementary. It's a sound picture that matches the two concertos pretty well, actually. And, you know, our personnel matches that quite well. So in the Haydn, you have double winds, and you don't have heavy brass there. And likewise in the Mozart. And it's fascinating. Mozart, at the age of 16 in the Eighth Symphony, you already hear this unique, effortless grace and beauty of his writing, and none of it is simplistic. You know, mm-hmm. we're used to thinking of young people somehow of being naive or shallow, and it has these qualities which completely resonate with Mozart at the height of his powers. And then meanwhile, Haydn, who was about 24 years older than Mozart, he had a head start on him. Oh, they knew each other and they were very friendly. Here in 1789, he was already quite famous and recognized by Oxford University, and they were bestowing a Doctor of Music degree upon Haydn. And for the occasion, he chose a symphony, which he'd actually written in Paris, but he brought this and performed it to say thanks and, you know, for the occasion. And so it became known as the Oxford Symphony, number 92.
Wow.
And I sometimes wonder, now, so poor Mozart, 70, 56 to 91, he lives. How many of those?
Yeah.
That's, you wonder, but he was incredibly prolific.
Oh,
and Haydn, with 104 symphonies, you kind of wonder, we only got to 40 with Mozart.
Yeah.
I wonder what the number would have been.
What would have happened if we had another 25 years of Mozart symphonies?
Imagine where Mozart might have gone in his compositional style into the life of Beethoven, the realm of Beethoven.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating to ask yourself.
And Jason, the repertoire for virtuoso guitar playing is less known than the repertoire for classical violin and piano and whatnot. So what do you experience from audience members who perhaps for the first time are attending a classic guitar concert?
Oh, I mean, the reception, I mean, like I said, my experience is the reception from audiences has been great. I mean, really good. I think what the main reason it hasn't enjoyed the kind of level of notoriety, of course, is really just due to the amount of repertoire in the 19th century. That was really kind of the thing that kind of drove the guitar underground a little bit, if you know, so to speak. And it wasn't really until the 20th century again, the early part of the 20th century, where a personality like Segovia, for example, Andres Segovia, would, you know, spark enough people to have interest in writing for it. And then the second generation guitarists like Julian Bream, the English guitarist, and then later on with Sharon Isbin, Manuel Barueco, Elliot Fisk, that third generation, really getting some big name composers really to write for the instrument. And that's what's going to help carry that process forward a little bit. But it really was, you know, if it would be a totally different situation if, you know, for the guitar, if Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, Schubert loved the guitar. So did Chopin, It just wasn't economically expedient for them to write for it.
If they had had a Paganini of the guitar.
Right. Yeah. Well, Giuliani, the weird thing is that Beethoven knew Giuliani. Giuliani was a cellist in the premiere of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. But it just was, and he was of this kind of thing. He wasn't quite the sensation, I think, that Paganini was. But they were there, but they were more like a little bit like second class citizens at the time.
But it's fascinating to think also about the influence that leading performers have in the generation of new music, and when those performers reach a level of execution that inspires composers and excites their imagination, then amazing things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, we're hearing that with Jason Vio's experience, and we know in Yo-Yo Ma's lifetime, and Rostropovich as a cellist.
Yeah.
Great violinists have done the same thing. Joachim for Brahms. I mean, all these things.
Yeah.
So.
We've been talking with conductor David Commande and guitarist Jason Vio. The Heartland Festival Orchestra's next concert is Guitar Classic, featuring music of Rodrigo, Mozart, and Haydn. The performance is tomorrow night at 7:30 at Five Points, Washington. Thank you both for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also this weekend, Cornstalk Theater gets its winter season underway with a production of Something Wicked This Way Comes. The play is an adaptation of the novel by Ray Bradbury. It's about what happens when two teenaged boys encounter a sinister traveling carnival. Performances begin tonight and continue through next Saturday at the Cornstalk Winter Playhouse.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Sierra Doss. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio on our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.